You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Tuesday, 20 October. I'm Simon Brown coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, we'll be chatting with Nissan Nair. Big day for financials on the market, and the JSE continues to lose listings as Afrox now heads to the exit with a private equity takeover. We've been talking to Kruger International, Mia Kruger. They're issuing a green social investment option, investing into the Tutsikamma Community Wind Farm. We'll get chat with Mia up front. And then Luna's offering interest on bitcoins that you hold in your Luno wallet as crypto becomes more and more like cash, but without the regulation, perhaps. Some morning headlines: MoneyWeb Omnia to raise 2.5 billion in asset sales. And from Business Day, my screen just refreshed on me. S&P worries about South Africa's spending habit. S&P, of course, Standard & Poor's. Morning markets: US was red overnight. S&P 500 off 1.6%. NASDAQ down 1.7%. Asia is red. Sydney off 0.7% and Tokyo down 0.5%. Commodities: red across the board, although only a little bit. Gold, $4 an ounce. Rand trading 16.55 against the US dollar. And top 40 opening call, we're looking for red opening, down probably about 0.5%.
Business, finance, and investment news. MoneyWeb Now
with Simon Brown
on the money. Also available on podcast.
Struggling to get our guests on the line. What I wanted to chat around was we're seeing a bunch of companies being taken private on the JSE, the most recent being Afrox. We've also, and we've touched on this, AdCorp and AdaptIT, the trading updates coming from them. Seems to be getting large amounts of value in our market, but investors seem to be less enthusiastic about it. We've got Nissan Nair on the line, portfolio manager, SAS Securities. Nissan, morning, appreciate your time. I was just saying that we got the news yesterday of Afrox being taken private, another listing leaving the JSE. We add to that some sort of updates. What was it? AdaptIT, AdCorp, both of those saw the stocks up 100%. There is value on our market, but it seems that like maybe some of our local investors aren't digging around, or perhaps I'm just missing it personally and I feel aggrieved.
Yes, Simon, I think you've got very good reason to feel aggrieved because that's exactly how I felt yesterday. And it wasn't just Afrox. You know, Metrofile gave us an update as well. I know it's 1 year look at saying that the Housatronic Corporation is still looking into them. You had Omnia selling a business, Oro Agri for close to about $150-160 million.
Dollars, yeah.
And, you know, it's not a relatively big contributor to their profit, yet it's such a big component of their market value. And it just makes you wonder, you know, exactly what's going on now. Are foreigners able to identify opportunities that local investors are perhaps missing? Yesterday was the day, I think, where we saw a lot of, corporate action taking place. In our local market, principally by foreigners who have clearly identified some of the South African businesses is presenting much better growth opportunities than what the locals seem to think. It could also be a function of liquidity, a lot of investors staying away from the market because of the uncertainty of COVID-19. But, I mean, as we know and we're beginning to learn again, you know, it's opportunities that are created in times like this that are worthwhile considering.
Yeah, and maybe it is just investors typically have a home bias where we have too much invested home. Maybe in South Africa, after our lost decade, it is a tough space for our economy, unemployment, we kind of just sort of stopped looking. And truthfully, there are some gems. We've got to dig around because there are some that aren't gems, make no mistake about that. But our bias almost is like ignore South Africa. And truthfully, we're ignoring it at our peril.
Yeah, I mean, you know, another one that came out yesterday that gave me some thought was Brimstone. you know, selling out of Life Healthcare. Remember, yeah. Life Healthcare was the old Afrox Healthcare. And it was a, you know, there's a lot of good businesses that actually came out of Afrox. But, you know, why I mentioned Brimstone is Brimstone trades at a huge discount to net asset value. And the only way to unlock that is to sell some of the listed investments. You know, yet again, you know, an unwinding of investments taking place because the share prices don't seem to fully reflect the value of the underlying businesses. And it might present an opportunity for investors, long-term investors, but we're just not seeing people take those opportunities right now, which is why all these corporates are having to do this corporate action. And I think we're going to see a lot more of this in the next 6 months.
Yeah, and you did flash back to my younger life there, Afrox Healthcare. I had forgotten about that. a big day for our banks yesterday, for the Fini 15. A lot of excitement, people. Is it time to buy the banks and stuff? But then I go look at the chart of that index. I mean, it really has been going nowhere post, you know, obviously it collapsed back in March, sort of recovered, still well down on the year. I mean, I think there's general agreement that banks are cheap, but there seems to be general agreement at the same time that there's not necessarily any hurry to buy those banks.
Yeah, I think it a lot depends. For me, it's all about this vaccine. You know, a week ago when Johnson & Johnson suspended trials, you saw the financials being heavily sold off. And yesterday, we had the announcement that the Oxford group, I think it's Oxford and Pfizer, Oxford and AstraZeneca, I can't remember which one it is. They look to be bringing the vaccine in by December this year, which I think would add a lot of confidence to the market and the perception that, you know, the South African economy would recover faster if there was a vaccine. Mm-hmm. And of course, the you know, the shares that you buy, if you're banking on a fast economic recovery, are the ones that are so heavily sold up, the banks and the property companies. So you saw First Trans, Standard Bank up 5% yesterday. I think IPROP was up 7 or 8%. You know, the real fallen giants had seemed to almost get a jolt of life back into them. And it's you know, but it's a risky trade. As you say, you know, people would rather sit on the sidelines and wait for the vaccine to come through first or see some signs of revival in the economy first, you know, before buying them up, which is exactly what you're saying. You might as well just sit and wait for that.
Yeah, we can sit and wait. That they're going sideways. That opportunity will probably still be there in a bit. Nissen Naya, as always, appreciate the time. Portfolio Manager, Sasfin Securities.
MoneyWeb now. On the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Mia Kruger now, director at Kruger International, with a slightly different hat on, of course, still a Kruger International hat. Morning, Mia, appreciate your time. Tsikama Community Wind Farm, a wind farm down in the Eastern Cape. And what they are, in essence, they're an infrastructure, renewable energy project, and Kruger International's getting some investment into it. Let's quickly just touch on the wind farm itself, where it is, and who it's supplying into the grid, I imagine.
Yes, good morning, Simon. It's nice to talk to you about this. We've really been waiting for this investment to be listed for quite some time now. The wind farm, as you say, is operational already. It's been operational since 2016, and it's just 30 kilometers west of Hermanszorp in the Eastern Cape. It's owned the majority owner of this wind community, Tsikama Community Wind Farm, is Senergy, who's a subsidiary of Exxaro, who everyone knows very well. They own 75% of the project, and they've been part of it since the beginning. And with them is the community of Tsikama National Trust. So they own about 9%, and we then now, through the Gaia Fund 1, who's listing on Thursday, are buying a 16% stake. So it's quite unprecedented to come into a project like this where it's already money-making, and it has a 20-year procurement deal with Eskom that's been approved already and has been operational, as I said, since 2016. So this is a wonderful asset, and we feel very, very privileged to be able to get in at this stage.
Yeah, that is. The asset is, in many senses, was de-risked. And I quickly want to just take listeners back to this is also a community project. This also, you know, this is you know, the good old-fashioned economics at play here, but you can benefit communities at the same time. And, you know, we have spoken before around green, around renewable. You know, part of this, you mentioned a 20-year offtake with Eskom. That gives a high level of certainty in terms of you know, the income coming. I'm imagining annual increases are probably baked into that contract. So it really is a massively de-risked renewable energy in investment opportunity.
Absolutely. You know, there's a couple of points here that that we are very excited about. The fact that we've now heard from Gwede Mantashe, our Minister of Mineral Resources and Energy lately, that they are gazetting the national legislation to produce a total of 11,800 megawatts of electricity, of which they want more than half of that to be from renewable sources. So despite the fact that this project already has a procurement with Eskom for 20 years, we are already producing more energy than we are supplying to Eskom. And with the fact that municipalities will now be able to buy their own energy, and the fact that Eskom will probably be taking up more energy from private providers, this is a great position. There are more projects like this where currently they are just pumping the energy that they are producing into the ground because they can't deliver it to anyone. And we think it's a great way to be part of the development of South Africa, to de-risk your portfolio and diversify further, and help the community, as you said, which is quite important to us.
And the structure, how this is going to work, the Gaia Fund 1, which is a vehicle listing on Thursday, Kruger International, Kruger Funds will be taking up those preference shares. Am I correct that they will then be included into some of the Kruger International collective investment schemes, and I would then sort of have it as part of a broader investment?
Yes, absolutely. So at this stage, we are taking up all the preference shares of Gaia Fund 1. Mm-hmm. We worked quite hard to get the most secure, tax-friendly way to include this investment into our collective investment scheme fund, the Kruger Fund. It will be taken up by the Kruger Prudential Fund, which is a low equity allocation, so a more sort of a conservative fund, the Kruger Balanced Fund, and then the Kruger Equity Fund. And all these funds will have roughly just over 5% exposure to common development wind farm. Mm-hmm. And the idea is why we listed it is to give us a greater allocation in future, because we know ASISA is talking about including a fifth asset class in infrastructure, yes, but that hasn't happened yet. So at this stage, we need to include it still as a private equity investment into the fund. And the idea is, of course, to diversify Gaia Fund 1 and include other projects into the fund as well. When that happens, there will be more preference shares brought out, and mm-hmm. more investors will then get the opportunity to invest in this great project.
I can leave it there. Great project. I think it's a great initiative. Congrats to you and your team. And I think it's a great investment class. As you say, CISA's looking at actually making this sort of infrastructure renewable a class on its own. But it's got different characteristics, different risk levels. Mia Kruger, as always, appreciate your time. Director, Kruger International.
MoneyWeb now. On the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Marius Rietz, he's a Luno General Manager for Africa. They announced yesterday morning that you can now earn interest on the Bitcoin that you hold in your Luno wallet. Marius, morning, appreciate your time. Is it as simple as that? If I've got some Bitcoin, which I do have in a Luno wallet, will I start earning some interest on that Bitcoin?
Morning, Simon. Yes, it is. Luno customers can now create a second Bitcoin wallet in the Luno apps, and they can then transfer Bitcoin into that savings wallet and start earning interest of up to 4% per annum from the next day. No fixed terms, no admin fees. Funds can be moved back from the savings wallet back into the standard normal Bitcoin wallet as well. And so people often ask us, how do we generate this return for the customers?
Yeah, next question.
So funds transferred in are placed with our lending partner, Genesis. Genesis is a US-based institutional lending platform. They've been around since 2013. They're the world's largest crypto lending platform. Mm-hmm. They then enter into loan agreements with borrowers, and these borrowers would typically be institutions. executing hedging strategies or market makers. And then these platforms, the companies typically borrow Bitcoin from Genesis at 8% interest, but mm-hmm. then they themselves, so they have the ability to generate upwards of 20-30% on futures arbitrage, for example. So we then pass the interest back to the retail investor on our side.
Okay, so I mean, for share investors, we call that script lending, and absolutely, it's used in people going short, it's used in people putting together sort of complicated structures and the like. I mean, so what's important here is the counterparty risk of Genesis, because of course, you know, I want to make sure we get those bitcoins back, and I assume you've done the due diligence and you're comfortable with Genesis as a counterparty.
Yes, Simon, we went through a quite a long process doing due diligence on them. Genesis collateralizes their loans up to 120%. Mm-hmm. They've had zero defaults as well since 2013. And, you know, as I said, obviously a lot of homework on them, on the operations. And they are one of the most respected names in the industry, and they're regulated in the US. So, but you're right, there will always be the counterparty risk. And so I think it's very important for our customers to understand that risk. There's no deposit protection or guarantee that you will get your capital back in this case. Mm-hmm. And also, it's a new product. There's no existing track record, which is normal with any new savings or investment product. But perhaps people should start small. Right? So don't go and place all your crypto long-term investments in this wallet. Start small. See how the interest accumulates in the wallet, see whether the transfer takes place in the first of the next month. And then make the informed decision as part of your diversified strategy then to place more funds here.
I take your point. That was exactly my thought. Start small, see how it works. It's not go boots and all. And a key point is I can at any point say, you know what, actually I want that crypto back because maybe I want to sell it or something. But research that you've done indicates that actually only 5% of your South African customers plan to sell their Bitcoin in the next 6 months. In other words, most of your holders, 95% of your holders, are really holding rather than speculating or doing short term. Now, of course, if the price was suddenly $20,000 tomorrow, that might change. But certainly taking it as an investment rather than a speculative approach to crypto.
Yes, absolutely. As you said, most of our active customers, I have to add, indicated that they intend to hold for the medium to long term. Mm-hmm. Sure, you also have customers speculating in the short run, taking a bet that the Bitcoin price will move favorably. But for our long-term investors, customers holding Bitcoin for the long-run customers, buying into the evolution of money for that matter and seeing positive developments, I mean, on the regulatory front, on the technology front, et cetera, I think for them it's a brilliant opportunity. And obviously the power of compound interest over a long period, I think that should excite most of these long-term investors. Just having to add again that people should understand the risks here. Most of the time, it's safer to store your cryptocurrency yourself on a hard drive wallet, and a lot of people in the industry advocate for that. But for new investors and new participants of the market, it's slightly more technical and complicated to do that. So that's why companies like Luno offer this custodial service where we store customers' crypto on their behalf, and we safeguard the crypto, and now we give them the option, then obviously to also earn interest on their balances. So it's driven by strong customer demand on our side, and I think probably also fast track due to the economic uncertainty and record low interest rates and mm-hmm. even negative interest rates in certain parts of the world.
A quick last question. Obviously, a lot of volatility back in March and April, global markets, commodities, cryptos, all of them. Have you seen an uptick in interest in cryptocurrencies and buying cryptocurrency over the 2020 year?
Yes, Simon, absolutely. We've seen steady growth since the mid-March COVID-induced crash. Bitcoin dropped initially, but then also recovered with mm-hmm. gold, and it's up 60% year-to-date, so making it one of the best-performing assets. With the increase in price, we saw an increase in trading volume, and we've also seen a strong demand, retail, but also institutional. And we've seen a couple of high-profile investors, listed companies entering the industry, the likes of MicroStrategy in the US and also Square recently, mm-hmm. Buying one Bitcoin as an inflation hedge primarily. So I think that this increase in volatility, sorry, increase in liquidity in the market definitely, so I think bodes well for the next couple of months. And we also saw Grayscale yesterday announcing. Grayscale is the largest institutional investment platform $1 billion of inflows in Q3 this year. So there's definitely a strong demand, and yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how with the U.S. elections and second wave of COVID in certain markets, how that impacts the crypto price going forward.
We'll leave that there. Maurice Reitz, he's GM Africa at Luno. Appreciate your time this morning. That's it for today. You'll find us live every weekday morning, 6:30 a.m. on the MoneyWeb website or the app, podcast every morning at 7 a.m. A massive thanks to my team, Eddie and Cordora, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning contribution. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.